Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Joe Healy. Today it is, we are finally at the end of the college baseball season, the supposed college baseball season, I suppose. I should say we are now into what was supposed to be the offseason, regardless of whether or not they were playing college baseball as scheduled this spring. So we can finally stop checking in on what was supposed to be happening. The memories of the 2020 season are already pretty old in our minds, and we would be putting them back in the rearview mirror regardless. But Joe and I, as always, are here to continue talking about college baseball throughout the offseason, as long as this one is going to last. Unprecedented spring leading to an unprecedented summer leading to a very long offseason. But Joe and I are here to continue talking about college baseball. And this week, we're going to be talking about our new Never Too Early Top 25. We updated it after, the dust has settled following the draft and following the non-drafted free agent signings. Now, players can still sign as undrafted free agents, and, the draft picks haven't all signed. But, there was a strong wave of undrafted players who signed within the first week to 10 days of that period being open. And now we're expecting every draft pick to sign eventually in a 5-round draft. It's pretty imperative that major league teams got the signability right and will be able to sign all of these players. If there are, reasons for us to revisit later, once the signing period deadline passes at the start of August, we may do so, but right now we're making some assumptions in this top 25, and you can see what those assumptions led to over on the website. We have number one team Florida again, and that's very relevant for this edition of the podcast, because we will also be joined by Florida coach Kevin O'Sullivan to talk about the Gators in 2021 and everything else that's happening around the program right now. So we have all of that is to say, college baseball is into the off season. It would normally have been into the off season anyway, but Joe and I still have plenty to talk about. So that's what we're gonna do here today, Joe.
First, I'd like to talk to you about fireworks. part of the summer is, of course, fireworks, and this has come into the news because people in New York City are reporting that people are just setting off fireworks out of boredom, and I've heard of this happening in other cities, although I'm fortunate in that that is not my city, because that would be obnoxious. But Macy's, have you seen this, that Macy's announced they're going to do with their 4th of July fireworks? Yeah.
And that immediately made me think of the 30 Rock episode where Jack Donaghy sets off a bunch of fireworks, and then people think it's some sort of an explosion. It goes very poorly because this Macy show is supposed to be unannounced.
Yes.
And I don't know. Unannounced fireworks in a city that has the potential to go very wrong.
Yeah. It's I think it's 4 or 5 different shows that are going to go off at random times and random, not random, but unannounced locations and unannounced times. And Roger Sherman from The Ringer tweeted about an underrated part of fireworks is being able to see them, which I think is, is right. That just does not, I read the press release, and the whole idea is they don't want people to gather around them. Okay. I get it. That's the time we live in, and Macy's probably already bought these fireworks, or at very least budgeted for these fireworks. So it's kind of maybe they feel some pressure to actually do them. So they're trying to find the best way to do it. I just don't know that this was it. I'm not really sure what other options were on the table, but just fireworks and part of it too is, I think probably especially in these times, things that are kind of the moment are few and far between. I mean, that's part of the reason why we are starved for live sports, is not just that we love sports, although we do. It's also just that we as a society love live content, because it's the anything can happen. We don't know what's going to happen. We've not seen this before element that even scripted TV can't give you. And fireworks, I guess, are part of that in a certain way. So I think they're trying to capitalize a little on that. You just don't know where they're going to, it just seems like a really weird idea. so that's, uh, So that's also what summer means, is fireworks. And apparently if you live in New York City, it means random fireworks five different times over the course of, I don't know, hours, days, something. That just, that idea struck my ear as kind of strange.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'll also admit that until this morning, I didn't realize the 4th of July was this weekend.
That has also snuck up on me, yes. I would imagine being in an office, even an office like ours, where we're not as kind of tied to these holidays as some more traditional offices are. Like, but being in the office, I think, would have made it a little more apparent what was happening. I was a little bit reminded of it when I went to summer ball. I guess this is a good segue into actual baseball stuff. I went to an actual summer ball game last weekend, and that was exciting. Went to Coastal Plains League, went out to High Point for the High Toms, and it was really nice. I mean, I saw some good players. You know, I think the bar is just lower for summer ball this year because the players are so spread out, but I saw some nice arms, and it was just nice to kind of be out at the park, and everyone was wearing masks and was social distance. And so it was just like a nice stress-free, so few of our experiences in these times have been free of stress. Like just going to the grocery store has become, or what have you, going anywhere in public has become something to kind of stress about because you have to plan it and be conscientious about it. So it was just kind of nice to just be there and have baseball going on, and to not have that be a source of anxiety in a way was really, really nice. So that has also reminded me that 4th of July is coming up, because looking ahead on the schedule, I realized that this coming weekend is 4th of July weekend, which I presume in summer ball is kind of a big weekend, but it's going to be a little bit different this year with so many of the, at least in the Coastal Plain League, the teams in the northern part of the league in North Carolina and Virginia are being really conscientious about not having very many people in the stands. So it certainly is not going to be the type of ticket windfall that most summer leagues probably expect for your average 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, and you know, places have been canceling their 4th of July celebrations. You know, typically here in Durham, the 4th of July, this would be a time where the collegiate national team would be playing in Cary and Durham and maybe in Charlotte. They've done that at times, and this weekend would have been a big weekend. They never announced a schedule for this year, so I don't know if it would have been Cuba here this weekend, or Japan, or Korea, or whatever, but obviously none of that's happening. Just another reminder of what we don't have this summer, but there is some summer ball being played, like Joe mentioned, and we'll continue to monitor that around the country as leagues get going. There are a lot more leagues. I shouldn't say a lot more. There are a few more leagues and a few more pods within these leagues that are scheduled to get going this week. The Florida League begins this week. The Northwoods starts a couple of pods this week. The Texas Collegiate League gets going this week. So there are a few more leagues to get going. And I think the Futures League is around this time as well. I cannot offhandedly remember what their start date is. But for the most part, if your league's not going this week, it might not be going. This was kind of the week that a lot of leagues had circled as the start of July to, you know, get summer ball going. But there are leagues already going. There are pods, you know, within these leagues that, you know, I mentioned that the Northwoods has a couple pods going. Well, the Northwoods is going in one of its pods already. So summer ball is happening out there in scattered places and in very different circumstances. But there is some college baseball being played still, even though a lot of leagues were not able to play this summer. But that is probably the main thing to watch right now in terms of college baseball. You know, I think a lot of people around the country, you know, coaches and players are still kind of trying to figure out a lot of things, what they're supposed to do with their summers. But there are some places where the baseball is happening. And one of those places, I guess, is always at baseballamerica.com, where again, today we released an updated version of our Never Too Early Top 25. We wound up keeping the top five the same. That's Florida, Texas Tech, UCLA, Ole Miss, and Virginia. They were your five when we debuted this ranking in May. They remain your five as we update it here at the end of June. We moved one new team in, that is Santa Barbara. They replace Central Florida. The Gauchos were kind of on the cusp of the top 25 to begin with, and then made it through the draft unscathed. I remain very excited about the Chos for 2021. Meanwhile, UCF has a few very important pitchers that they have to replace, both due to the draft and due to transfers. So UCSB comes in, UCF goes out. I would encourage you to read the rest of it over at the website. There's been some moving and shaking in the top 10. You know, teams moving up, teams moving down. UCSB moves in, and Joe did a good job of rounding up everyone in the top 25, how they fared in the draft, and that led obviously to the bulk of these moves. But there's also been some transfer market movement, and of course the non-drafted free agents as well. But like I said at the top, you know, Florida again leads this top 25, and so we wanted to bring on Kevin O'Sullivan to talk about the Gators, who, beyond looking loaded, absolutely loaded for 2021, are a very interesting team. They have, you know, this year they wound up as the number one team at the end of the season. They started the year with 16 straight wins. That's a program record, finishing just 16-1. And, you know, they're also getting ready to open a new ballpark down in Gainesville next year. So there's a lot going on with the program. They also were one of the big winners in the draft. So just a lot to discuss with Sully. So we're excited to have him on, Joe, and, just kind of, dig a little more into what Florida is and what to expect from Florida in 2021. We're excited to welcome in Florida coach Kevin O'Sullivan to the Baseball America College podcast. Coach, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, Teddy.
Absolutely. So it's an exciting time, for Florida baseball with, a new ballpark on the way. And, we've just seen the draft results, and we can kind of begin to assess the 2021 roster situation. But, before we get to all of the upcoming things, I wanted to, take a minute just to talk about 2020. And you guys were off to an incredible start to the season, program best, 16 wins to open the year. And that was coming off of a season that by Florida standards was down in 2019. What do you think allowed this group to click this year and to get off to that incredible start to the season that you guys had?
Well, I think it's a combination of things, Teddy. I think, number one, a collection of guys have, had gotten better from year one to year two. And obviously Tommy Mace had made a jump. Jack Leftwich had made a jump. Obviously Ben Speck made a huge jump. Nick Pogue made a huge jump. Christian Scott made a huge jump. We had an infusion of some really good talented young players. Josh Rivera at short, Judd Fabian made a jump, and Jacob Young made a jump, and Nathan Hickey, who's a freshman, who was about to take over, the catching situation, at least share it with Cal Greenfield. And obviously he was hitting the middle of the lineup. And then obviously Hunter Barco and Brandon Sproat. And we just had a collection of, older guys that had made a significant jump in their performance from year one to year two. We had some older guys make a jump, from their sophomore to junior year. And then we had some really good talented freshmen come in to kind of complement the roster. So I think there's a lot of things that happened, but, obviously starting the season out the way we did, I didn't have those types of expectations, which I never do with any team, but it was a really fun, fun group to coach.
So the season obviously came to a premature end, and then we went through the draft process and everything. And there was, probably an expectation from a lot of people, at least myself, that Tommy Mace would be drafted, and that probably Jack Leftwich would be drafted as well. Neither of them was drafted. They're instead opting to return to Gainesville, and again, be ready to lead the rotation in 2021. What does it mean to have those two guys back, with the team for another season?
Well, it was unexpected. I think if the season would have played out, maybe the draft would have been a little bit different, but certainly them not signing professionally has, very little to do with their ability. It had all to do with their signability. And both of them had stuck to their numbers and felt like, they had some unfinished business, from an individual standpoint and from a team standpoint. So obviously, with them coming back, we've put ourselves in a position to where this is, one of the more talented rosters we've had. We've had some really talented ones in the past, but obviously, getting them back is a huge, huge plus for us in our program. So we're excited to have them back and, hopefully looking forward to a successful 21 season.
You mentioned his name in the answer to the first question, but Jed Fabian's a guy who really made a jump for you guys in the last year. And now he's in a position where he projects as a premium pick in the next draft. What kind of improvements have you seen from him? What has allowed him to make the types of jumps that we've seen him make?
Well, he's really a five-tool athlete. I mean, he can throw, he can defend. He's as good as any defender we've had in center field, and we've had some really good ones, obviously some great ones. He can hit for average, he can hit for power, he can run. There's really not a weakness to his game. I think the biggest thing for him is probably from the mental standpoint, for him to come out of high school early and play just about every day and to go through the ups and downs of an SEC schedule and him to be able to stand on his own 2 feet and survive that, I think speaks volumes of his mental toughness. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that he's probably grown the most with and learning from the failures, because obviously most kids, when they come out of high school, they don't go through a whole lot of failures and tough times. But yeah, I mean, he was a champ, and he handled it like a veteran. And I think he's hardened to a point where, he understands the ups and downs of the game. And for him to come out the way he did after his freshman year, obviously coming out of high school early is only going to pay dividends down the road.
Yeah, player development is obviously very important to you. We're talking about all these guys that made jumps between 19 and 20, and now we've never seen a spring and now a summer like we're in now with so many lost games and lost practices. What did you want your guys doing in the spring once the season was canceled, and what do you want them doing this summer to start preparing for the fall and to help make them continue to be able to make these developmental improvements?
That's a good question. I think early on there wasn't a whole lot of direction, and I kind of felt bad as the head coach not being able to give them direction. But there was so much unknown with COVID that I didn't know what was going to happen. But over the last 3 months, we've got our kids from South Florida playing in the South Florida Collegiate League. We've got six or seven kids playing for the Scorpions in that Florida Baseball League. We've got three players that have gone out to Tulsa to play for Tom Holliday. So our players are out playing, and there's probably going to be a few more, once they get their arms in shape or their legs back in shape, that they might go play for a few weeks or whatever. But our guys have stayed active. They've been very aggressive as far as wanting to go play. So obviously we're excited to watch these guys. Unfortunately, we got to watch them online, but I'm real excited with the effort they put in and the aggressiveness that they've had to go out and play.
What has that summer ball process been like for you and your coaching staff? Because it seems like going back now a couple of months, it seems like on a week-to-week basis, everything was changing, whether it was the Cape isn't going to go, and then this league's not going to go, and that league's not going to go, and this league's only going to play with half of its teams. That must have been just kind of a challenge for you and your staff to just figure out where, and you guys have a couple of local leagues, that helps, I'm sure, but that had to be a little bit of a challenge to try to find the right fits for all your guys who wanted to get out and play.
To be honest with you, I did not initiate this with the players. This was them coming to me saying they want to go play. And I think what we try to do, and we are, obviously fortunate because there's a few leagues in Florida. And we had some guys going to the Cape that could play for, Tom Holliday out in Tulsa. That was obviously a natural fit for us, but it was their initiative that really pushed this thing. Our staff never really pushed, hey, you need to go play here, you need to go play there. It was really a group that I think probably started talking, as a group when they did these, chat texts and all that stuff. And I think they as a group wanted to go out and play. So we try to facilitate that and get them maybe places that are closer to home. But obviously we're real excited that we have a bunch of people, that are out playing and, at least getting back on the field again.
You mentioned that next year's roster is shaping up to be one of your most talented, and we're right there on the hype train, I guess, with our never too early top 25, having you as the early preseason number one team. What about that roster depth or talent is exciting you the most right now?
Well, I think the most exciting thing is trying to figure out as a staff how we're going to manage, so many good players and really build the team concept, because as well as I do, the most talented team is not always the team that wins the last game of the year in any sport. So we've got a challenge ahead of us to figure out how we can mold all of these really talented players and collectively, strive for the same goal at the end of the year. And it's not going to be easy. It's going to be challenging, but, if we can get off to a good start in the fall and as the fall goes on and continue to build that, then I think we've got a chance to be a really special team. But talent alone is not going to, allow you to win the last game of the year. And obviously it's extremely difficult to do in any sport, like I said. But, I think as a staff, we've talked about it. We're looking forward to that challenge.
One of the other exciting things you have going on campus, obviously, is that the new ballpark that Teddy alluded to in the introduction. What is the status of that project? Where are they kind of at now in that process? And what has that been like for you to see this project through from the initial blueprints all the way through to being able to take the field in 2021 in the brand new place?
Well, to be honest, just to be a part of something like this is obviously, a lifetime achievement. I mean, you don't have this opportunity at many places, in college baseball to be a part of a transition from, a historic ball field at Florida and move into a new one. And the amount of money that our administration committed to, I mean, it's been a really special, process to be a part of. Actually, I think most of our staff has moved in. I'm going to go in there tomorrow and really start unpacking some of my boxes for the first time. But it's a beautiful ballpark, not to take anything away from the other ballparks, in the country or in the SEC, but it's, in my opinion, I've been to just about every ballpark. It might not be the biggest, but I would argue that it's the nicest one in the country. And I think the amenities that our players are going to be afforded and, the fan experience and everything that it's going to lend to the experience for everybody. I mean, I'm really proud of it. And, like I said, looking forward to, finally getting in there. And I've given tours, at least 2 to 3 times a week, to obviously various different people. And, I keep getting the same response that it's better than what they thought. And it's hard for me to put adjectives on this, words on it, but it is a beautiful, beautiful ballpark. It fits Florida perfectly. And like I said, we're looking forward to getting into it.
You guys didn't have a chance to really give McKeithen a final send-off because of the way the season ended. But what are your favorite memories going to be from the old ballpark?
Okay, I've been asked that a lot, Teddy. I think, obviously, when we won, in 2010 against Miami, had a chance to go to Omaha because obviously Miami had historically, had the best of Florida. And I think just getting that monkey off our back was kind of a big deal for our program. And obviously Miami's, history in their program is second to none, and they've, but for us to get that, get over that hurdle, so to speak, I think was big for our program. And then, obviously Austin Langworthy, his home run against Auburn, what a tough fought series we had. And for him, who's been a four-year player for us, and to have him, who's a local kid, be put in that situation and obviously have arguably the moment of his career, and to be a part of that, I think is awesome. So, but there's so many moments. I mean, I could go on and on, but I think those are the two that kind of stick out the most.
We've seen this year, or this summer, I guess, even the so-called new college baseball model that Eric Bakich and the group of coaches have, kind of presented to the world as the idea of pushing the season back. Just what are your thoughts on that and the idea of moving all of the college baseball season back by a month?
Well, I know Eric's put a lot of work into this, and I know Randy Macy at West Virginia had put a lot of work into it as well. I've looked at it. I've got mixed emotions on it. I'm not against it. I'm not totally for it. I'm kind of caught in the middle. I think it's like anything else. I mean, maybe a 2 week later start might bode well for everybody around the country. I don't know if a month is what we need to do, but at the end of the day, the University of Florida is not going to be affected one way or the other, whether we start in the middle of February, whether we start 2 weeks later or a month later. I guess that, there's a lot of questions I still have as far as what is the real significant increase in revenue and fan support. I think that's where I kind of, still have some questions about it. But I do appreciate Eric and Randy's effort in trying to make positive movement in our game. But I don't know, like I said, it's hard for me to answer your question specifically. I don't know if it's a 4 week change or a 2 week change. Do we meet in the middle? I don't know. But it's certainly an interesting topic to talk about.
You alluded to it there a little bit, but how important is it just for college baseball to kind of come together on something like this, whether it works for your program or any program individually? How important is it just as a group to kind of come together and start to have real conversations about how this sport can move forward and start to advance in some of the ways that so many of us want it to advance, whether it's another coach or scholarships or whatever it is? And if nothing else, it seems like this discussion is an avenue for walking college baseball down that path. I'm curious if you feel the same way.
Well, I think there's a lot of, this is an important topic, but I also think the scholarship issue is an important topic. The 25% is an important topic. We're the only sport that's equivalency and headcount sport. We've got quite a few issues, and I think until, to be quite honest with you, I think until we can all get together and make decisions that are best for our sport rather than what's best for our program, we're going to continue to struggle and make changes. And obviously every program's got their strengths and weaknesses. Obviously we're in a situation here at Florida and a lot of schools in the SEC, we have a lot of advantages. But at the end of the day, if we could look at things in a way that what's going to better our sport rather than what's going to better our own specific program, I think we're going to obviously continue to struggle to get on the same page.
I've asked a lot of coaches, during the spring and into the summer, kind of what they're doing to occupy their time since you can't coach, you can't recruit, and you certainly have a lot of open time, I imagine, except that you have two young children who I'm sure are taking a fair amount of your time these days. Just what has it been like to, be able to spend the time with them that you've had this spring? That's unusual. And what has been your favorite ways to pass time with your children?
Well, that's another good question, Teddy. I think, I'm like every other parent, trying to figure out the whole homeschooling part was obviously challenging in the beginning. But I think the normal, things that you take, take for granted, the laundry, the dishwasher, cleaning the house, getting the kids ready, to have play dates and, those types of things. I think there's a lot of things that go into it that you kind of miss, obviously some focus on because you're so locked into, other things that are going on with your job or whatever it might be. But I think moving forward, I think we're just kind of waiting to see what the fall's going to look like, not only at Florida, for student athletes, but what it's going to look like for, you know, my two kids with, you know, with school. I mean, they go to school full time, and, you know, if that's the case, you know, how does childcare look, you know, and, you know, all these types of things. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, but I've really enjoyed being a dad. I always have, obviously, but I think this time that I've had with them has certainly opened my eyes up to a lot of different things. And I've tried to embrace this whole thing, which is, you know, obviously hard for everybody. You know, we're trying to understand what the future is going to look like. But to be honest with you, having this time with them, you know, this may be the only time, you know, that us as parents can be able to have this time. So, but obviously we're looking forward to having some sort of normalcy in the fall and getting back to a routine. But, you know, from my standpoint, it's been really enjoyable.
Yeah, I imagine that they're both going a little stir crazy as well. I know they're both pretty active from what I can tell, seeing them at the ballpark.
Yeah, the apple does not fall too far from the tree, that's for sure.
Well, hopefully everyone's able to, like you said, find a little bit of normalcy here in the summer and into the fall, and we can get back to the way things we're a little more accustomed to, and we can see the Gators on the field next spring, because I'm very excited to see what Florida looks like in 2021, and I know you are as well.
Yeah, we are, and we're just looking forward to hopefully, you know, see what football looks like in the fall, and you know, obviously, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered still, but we'll get back to normal, you know, at some point. It's hopefully sooner than later. But I appreciate you having me on, Teddy.
Thank you again to Florida coach Kevin O'Sullivan for joining us today on the Baseball America College podcast. Joe, it's, you know, like I said, there's a lot going on with Florida. We touched on a lot of it there with Sully. The team in 2021 is stacked. And I think that's where my mind goes first with them. You know, the ballpark is an interesting piece. What happened in 2020 is important because it feeds into why they're number one now. He talked about the development of, you know, guys like Fabian and Mace and Leftwich and Specht and on and on. And those guys taking a jump from 19 to 20, you know, helps them in 2021. But when we look at that roster in 2021, I mean, with Mace and Leftwich back and Hunter Barco, the whole rotation's back. You know, Specht and Pogue were part of, and David Lucci, Tyler Nesbitt, Brandon Spurt, I could keep going. Like, the bullpen was loaded, and you know, it's going to get more loaded because they have a ton of talent coming in. They're going to have another top five recruiting class. And you know, the offense was primarily, you know, freshmen and sophomores. So it was a pretty young group offensively. Judd Fabian's at the center of that. He's a probable top 10 pick next year. And, you know, I mean, Brady Smith signed as a free agent, but Brady Smith wasn't a full-time starter this year. He had been in the past, but had kind of been, you know, got beat. And then, you know, Kirby McMullen was a senior. He's already announced he's returning. Still a little unsure about Laneworthy. I think he's probably returning at this point. But it's, you know, top to bottom, pitching, lineup. They've got an incredible team coming back and a lot of talent coming in to, you know, further strengthen and deepen that talent pool.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's, you know, I'm actually a little bit surprised and not that Florida hasn't had a little bit more attrition this offseason just because of that. You know, that seems kind of like a natural consequence of this, whether that's, and look, I mean, look, before I say anything else, I'm certainly not the type to ever really second guess a kid's decision on what he wants to do with his future, because that's a personal decision between he and his family. And, you know, he discusses it with the coaching staff and all that stuff. So like that, this, none of this is a criticism of any individual decision that's been made, because that's a very personal decision. And I for one have never been a fan of, you know, telling kids what they should or shouldn't do, whether it's the draft or returning to school or the way they approach their recruiting, whatever it is. Anyway, I was a little bit surprised they didn't have a little bit more of that attrition, whether it's some of those seniors signing kind of right away or more guys in the transfer portal who are maybe more fringy guys, especially on a loaded pitching staff, you know, transferring out. So I'm surprised from that standpoint, but then also not surprised because, I mean, I don't know, this looks like it's going to be a pretty fun group to be a part of in 2021. And that's got to be a really exciting thing for these guys who ultimately, yes, they went to Florida in order to set themselves up to play pro baseball. And Florida obviously gives you as good a chance to do that as just about anywhere. But they also went there to go to Omaha and to win a bunch of games. And certainly this team looks like it's going to be poised to do that in 2021. So, a team without kind of any obvious, you know, super obvious flaws. Every team can be nitpicked. I mean, that's just the way that it works, but it's a team that really goes into the season strong in all areas. And I think this is kind of obvious because they ascended to number one in 2020 and were so clearly the number one team when the season ended. But I think they really gained a lot by actually playing as much as they did in 2021, because just going back to the conversation you and I had in the preseason about Florida, and you were more bullish on them than I was, and you ended up being right for that. But there were questions about Florida, but we saw in 2020 those jumps that you allude to that made it clear, though, this is the best team in the country, at least as it stood right at that moment. In another scenario where they kind of it just could have gone very differently in 2020, and we'd be going into 2021 from a very different standpoint for Florida. They'd still be ranked highly. We'd still think highly of them, but it'd be different than what it is right now, which is, wow, this team is the clear-cut favorite to win the national title going into the 2020 season. They did a whole lot with ultimately a very short amount of time in the 2020 season to show the team they were and the team they should be going into next season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the development of those players is hugely significant, and you saw it pay off in 2020. Obviously, we didn't get to see a payoff in the biggest possible way, but they were absolutely electric from the start. And, you know, yes, some of that is the freshmen that came in. You know, I don't want to dismiss what having Hunter Barco and Josh Rivera and the rest, Nathan Hickey, what that meant to, you know, the team as a whole. But, you know, seeing the development of Mason Leftwich and Fabian especially and McMullen, who had come to Florida as a two-way player but had primarily been a pitcher, and all of a sudden is your starting third baseman, and just all of that meant. I mean, that's been big for them in 20, and it sets them up for what could be a very special 2021. I mean, I'm incredibly bullish on what this Florida team can accomplish, and to hear Kevin O'Sullivan talk about this being one of the most talented Florida teams that he's had. I mean, just go look at what the last decade has had talent-wise at Florida. Like, there are some incredible, incredible teams that he's had there, and there's no reason why this one can't be that good. You might not have an AJ Puck in this rotation. By that I mean you might not have a guy who ends up being the sixth overall pick, but at the same time you might, because Hunter Barco could be that guy. It might not be Mace, it might not be Leftwich, although I don't want to put it past them, but like, it just because Barco is a year behind and we're not going to be thinking about his draft status until 2022. And in a lot of sense, like, that he's going to be a premium pick. Mace is probably, going to be expecting to be a first round pick next year. I think that's why he's back, because he thinks that with another year, he could, go and be a first round pick. This year he was ranked, I believe it was 75th, maybe 76th on the BA 500. So he's, I'm sure, thinking about, like, can I be a first round pick in a year? If I bet on myself here. And so there's a lot to like about the pitching staff. There's a lot to like about the lineup. They defend really well. I mean, it's a Florida team, and what you saw from this specific Florida team to start 2020 was special. And I wish we could have seen it play out over a full season, but I'm very, very excited to see what it looks like throughout a full season in 21.
And their fans are quite excited to be watching it in the shade.
That is the big part in the new stadium for fans. I mean, there are a lot of exciting things about that new stadium, but yeah, the shade element at McKeithen, or the lack thereof, was kind of long derided. And like, why can they not figure out how to get some shade in that ballpark? Well, they've got some shade in the new stadium, like you said, Joe.
Yeah, one of my earliest memories of watching, well, I shouldn't say earliest, but one of the things that I remember from early on, I don't remember the exact chronology of it, but I used to, one of the college baseball things that used to come out on my radar is that on the weekends, Fox Sports affiliates, especially if there was no, so growing up in Houston, if there was no Astros game on the local Fox Sports affiliate on a Saturday in the afternoon and the game was in the evening instead, a lot of times Saturday afternoons, they'd throw on some local college baseball broadcast on the Fox Sports network. Sometimes it was a Big 12 game. Sometimes it was a game from in Florida on, I think at that time they called it Sun Sports. But long story short, I remember a game from McKeithen that I watched back in, it was probably, I think it was pre-Sully, honestly. And then they would pan out, and like you'd look and you'd be like, oh my goodness, there is like, that sun is beating down on those people. And it just, it's one of those places that just looked hot. Like, you know, it's hot because it's Central Florida and in the, you know, April, May and June. But it, beyond that, like you could tell me that was anywhere and I'd go, man, it just looks hot there. And so certainly that will be an upgrade from a fan enjoyment standpoint. But I'm looking forward to seeing this stadium with, you know, whether with my own eyes in person or just on television, to kind of get a sense for, you know, where it kind of slots in with some of these other SEC palaces that we've seen open in recent years. And some of the ones that are brand new, like the Dude, and then some are that have just kind of stood the test of time, like Bomb at Arkansas, for example. And kind of get a feel for where that fits. And some of that is in the eye of the beholder, of course, but just the level that the SEC ballparks have risen to now is obviously on a whole nother level. And Florida upgrading from McKeithen, which was a serviceable ballpark in every sense of the term, but certainly this will be an upgrade for them and should, I would imagine, put them right up there in the talk among the best in the country. Or, well, I was going to say conference, but by virtue of being that, you are also one of the best in the country.
Yes, that is definitely true. And I'm looking at some pictures that our friend Nick De La Torre, who covers the Gators for Gator Country, took this weekend at the new ballpark. And it looks amazing. Like Sully said, it's not the biggest. You know, the seating capacity at the Mississippi ballparks and at Baum and at the Box is all going to be bigger, I would expect, also at A&M. Maybe South Carolina. I'm not sure where exactly they landed on a seating capacity in Florida. I know at one point they were talking about 10,000. There are, from my estimation, not 10,000 chairbacks in these pictures, but I don't know if that original number included berm counts and the like. It has spacious berms, which I know is one of the complaints in Starkville, is that they took away too much of that seating. But it looks great. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to get down to see it. I have mentioned several times here on the podcast that I'm very disappointed that I wasn't able to see Florida play Georgia this year. I was in Gainesville for that. I was in Gainesville for Mace versus Hancock and Leftwich versus Wilcox. Did not quite get that. Season ended just a little too early for that to be played, but the new ballpark looks fantastic. I will say that I'm really going to miss when I am in Gainesville or when you're, you know, watching the game on TV, that, you know, you're not going to be able to look past the outfield and see the O Dome and know that, you know, the Swamp is right across the street. The fact that those three stadiums were all just right there in the heart of the Florida campus, I thought was really cool. It made for a really cool, you know, experience from my perspective. But, you know, they to move into this new stadium, they're moving to a different part of campus that is still going to, like, there are other sports facilities out there, just not the O-Dome. So, you know, no one will be hitting a home run to the O-Dome anymore, as a few people definitely took aim at it. You know, JJ Schwartz definitely took aim at that, at the O-Dome beyond left field a few times. And I know he's not alone in sending some shots that probably made it pretty close or actually did make it out to the basketball arena.
It's definitely something that how a stadium fits into the campus community is certainly something that I would not have anticipated when I got into this profession and started pursuing it, that would be a part of the enjoyment of it. You kind of think of the facilities themselves and for your job and mine, how the media setup is and all things like that are stuff that I anticipated. I did not anticipate how much I enjoy stadium having a lot to do with how it fits into the campus community, but that is absolutely the case. And, you know, the ones that are now, that does not mean that everything is rosy when that happens though, because that if it was really nestled into campus, that also means good luck finding a place to park, unless you are specifically, there's a garage or something right there that's slotted for baseball. There are a lot of campuses where you're kind of left to your own devices there. So that can make it a little more complicated. But in terms of aesthetics, it always is kind of nice when a ballpark really fits into, whether it's architecturally or whether it's just in terms of it seems to make sense where it is on campus. And even to the extremes, like I'm kind of a fan of what Vanderbilt has going on, where, you know, literally the left field wall is kind of shaped like it is because it's moving around the basketball arena. It's kind of a neat little quirk there at Vanderbilt. And there are other examples of stadiums in the shadow of the football field, or, you know, right up against the basketball arena, things like that. So not alone in that regard, but it's just certainly not something I thought was going to be part of how much I enjoyed a college baseball game and being in those college towns. But with several years now under my belt, I realized that is absolutely the case.
Sometimes it actually helps with the parking situation, because Auburn is another one of these where Plainsman Park is literally in the shadow of Jordan-Hare and whatever they call their basketball stadium or arena, I suppose, is across the street. And because of that, there is ample parking for baseball. There's a parking deck right there, and then the whole basketball lot is open for baseball. So it's very easy to park at Auburn. But Vanderbilt, dead opposite. Good luck finding. You know, there is a deck, but aside from the deck, you know, it's parking at Vanderbilt is much trickier. So it goes, you win some, you'll lose some in terms of the dead center of or right in the middle of campus with some of these stadiums.
Just quickly on this, and then we can move on. What do you call them, like, before you started interacting with them as much as you do, having to be around college campuses, did you call them parking decks?
No, they're parking garages.
Yeah, see, so did I. Like, I grew up calling them parking garages, but you hear parking decks, and then I've also heard ramps, parking ramp.
And I'm not here for the ramp, no.
Yeah, like, I don't want to necessarily implicate anything, anyone in or any program in particular, but I was at because I don't even know if I have this remembered right, but I think I was going to that tournament at a U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. And the parking there is a little bit complicated because it's a football stadium, and so not all of the parking facilities are open, and it's in a busy part of town. So you kind of have to know where you're looking. You know, you can't just kind of circle the block a couple times very quickly to figure out where you need to go. You kind of need to know. And in email correspondence, you know, I think they called them the parking ramps. And I was like, I don't know what that means. Like, I figured it out once I Googled and stuff, but I believe it was at Minnesota they called them parking ramps. And so I don't know if it's a regional thing or just kind of a personal preference thing, but I'd never heard anything but parking garage until really, I think probably several years ago when I first started having to think about these types of things every weekend on the road at baseball games. So it's interesting that you called them garage as well, because I thought maybe it was just a kind of a regional thing.
No, I mean, it may be, but I also don't know the, like, where the decks are coming from particularly. But yeah, I would normally call them parking garages, but for some reason, when I'm talking about, like, on campus things, they become decks. Hmm. Yeah, so all of that is to say, Florida loaded in 2021 in a new ballpark. You know, Joe, why don't we transition a little more into the top 25? And I think that what we saw coming out of the draft, you know, when we declared Florida huge winners from the night, was that they were just more locked in at number one. So not moving anything at the top of the ranking was not a surprise. But, you know, within the top 10, Oklahoma fell. We flipped around Vanderbilt and Louisville. Arkansas moved into the top 10 to replace Oklahoma. Any of that movement strike you as being particularly interesting? I know you were high on Oklahoma especially, and then all their entire rotation got drafted, and you know, we felt like we needed to drop the Sooners a little bit. But you know, the top 10, I thought, was a little more status quo than I'd anticipated it being when we decided to do an initial ranking in early May, and then know that we were going to come back after the draft had played out. I thought there was going to be more movement within the top 10.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I kind of thought there would be a little bit more movement. And one thing I was kind of struck by is so much of who we were talking about as winners and losers after the draft had a lot to do with what you did with your recruiting class. And that was an interesting part of the discussion for me, because that's just a really interesting philosophical debate about how much do you factor that in? Because ultimately we don't know how good these guys will be. And that's the game, right? I mean, you have to do that every offseason when we rank top 25 teams. But it's, you know, most of the time we are really relying on what do we know about this team? Who was good last year? Who's back from last year? What did they do last year? And then you kind of sprinkle in the recruiting stuff here and there. I think with this, we did that again, but I think in my head, you know, we had talked so much about teams holding classes together and the anticipation that, hey, these teams are going to get a lot of their recruits to campus they wouldn't in a normal year have gotten to campus. And I think that kind of put me in a mode where that type of thing was going to matter a lot more when you and I went back onto these rankings. But then, of course, the obvious pushback on that is, well, everyone is going to be more talented because they were all playing by the 5-round draft. So there was that. But also, just when you get right down to it, we just don't know with recruiting classes. And there are a lot of really talented recruits that, again, because of the 5-round draft, probably aren't going to get to play as much as they were going to get to play. So how much does it matter? Just for example, and I don't mean this as a specific example, but Florida's got a whole bunch of really talented players coming to campus, but it's going to be hard to imagine more than a couple of them really breaking out in a big way. And so how much more does it matter to a Florida, or I don't know, pick your team in the top 5 of this, that they added a handful more top-rated recruits to already loaded teams? So then there's, I guess, on the flip side of that is, of course, like teams like Georgia Tech that we feel really good about. And part of that is because, well, they did lose some guys and they weren't as talented to begin with as a Florida, if you will. So them getting a handful of really, really talented recruits to campus matters incrementally more than it would at Florida. So I say all that to say, I came into this thinking that kind of thing would matter more. But then when you and I really got to talking about it, I think what we both settled on is just, yes, UCLA, for example, I think is a good one. They got hit pretty hard in the draft, maybe depending on who you ask, more than you would have anticipated. They still bring a lot of talent to campus, but that really kind of gutted that recruiting class. And yet we held them in the same spot because ultimately the main reasons we like UCLA are still intact with the pitching they have coming back, plus a guy like Matt McClain, one of the more dynamic players in college baseball. And the recruiting is kind of just either the cherry on top, or is, you know, just a little bit something you're left missing there, but ultimately is not going to necessarily drive where we rank these teams. And so I think that's also a part of why you didn't see a lot of movement in the top 10, is we had these teams ranked in the top 10 in a lot of cases because we knew what they were probably going to lose in the draft, and we were comfortable with what they were going to lose in the draft and what they brought back. And that really, in a lot of cases, with the exception of Oklahoma, that really didn't change a ton. And even in Oklahoma's case, we actually expected them to lose all three members of the rotation, but there was just something about it actually happening that was kind of jarring. Plus, they did have a couple of guys sign after the draft, so there was a little bit extra attrition there. But I think we were just so comfortable with what everybody in the top 10, with the exception of Oklahoma, already brought to the table that it made it to where there just wasn't a ton of movement there.
Yeah, I think the note about recruiting is, you know, Florida probably doesn't, I mean, it's not that they don't need the recruiting class. I mean, I guess in some respects they don't. Like, it's certainly going to be a huge benefit to them that they're bringing in another top five class for something like the eighth straight year. But you look at Miami, and Miami needs its recruiting class. Miami's going to have a top five class as well. And they're going to play those kids a lot right away, I would think, because, you know, that's another team that lost its entire rotation. So they need replacements there. And, you know, so some of these teams, you know, their recruiting class being hit hard means something else, you know, just because you can bring a lot of players back, or everyone's going to be older. Like, some of these teams like really need their recruiting class to step in. And even a program like Vanderbilt, which didn't lose much in the way of offense, with the exception of Austin Martin, who I don't want to downplay at all. I mean, that's the most dynamic player in the country. But, you know, the bulk of what Vanderbilt lost to the draft was on the map. And I guess, you know, they also lost Harrison Ray and Ty Duvall as non-drafted free agents. But I just see their lineup being, even if it was a little more, like, even if they hadn't lost three members of it, I still would see it as a little more open, partially because of the way Tim Corbin typically attacks things, and he mixes and matches for a while before he finds something. And, you know, lineups at Vanderbilt in February don't necessarily reflect their lineup in April. And then you add a whole bunch more talent to it, and like, they're just going to churn again, I would think. So I'm very interested to see what that looks like. Whereas Florida, you know, can basically run the entire same lineup back out next year if they want to, and if it's meriting. So I'm very interested to see how, you know, teams like that operate in terms of incorporating their freshmen. And you heard Kevin O'Sullivan talk about, you know, the difficult nature that's going to be, and he's always been very good about playing freshmen and trusting that the freshmen are ready, and that by May that decision is going to pay off, that you may take some lumps in April or, you know, in February and March, but by the time May and June come around, those freshmen are going to be ready to play on the biggest stage, and he's had a ton of success doing that. But I'm interested to see how teams like that incorporate freshmen, and how teams that are a little bit younger, because the college baseball as a whole is going to be older next year. So if you have to be a little bit younger, what is that going to end up looking like? And is that a significant disadvantage, or you know, does it wind up not mattering that much? So I'm interested to see how all those things shake out. And, you know, the other change in the top 10 that we made was Louisville moved up a spot. And, you know, I think that I've been bullish on Louisville from the start, but then seeing them get Luke Smith back, yes, they lost Detmers and Bobby Miller, and those are two big pieces out of the rotation, but getting Luke Smith back, even if he doesn't move to Friday, even if he still is just the Sunday starter, and Jack Perkins and Michael Prosecki slot in ahead of him, whatever it may be, having that guy with his experience, him pitching very important games for Louisville over the last 2 years, including pitching in Omaha, you know, that just feels like it's a very significant thing for Louisville, as well as getting back, you know, their closer in Kieran. Those two things, having that experience in significant roles on the pitching staff to go with what should be a very, very talented lineup, has me even more excited about what the Cardinals can be in 2021 than I was when I thought that at least one, if not both of them, would be heading into pro ball.
Yeah, and the argument for, you know, them end up moving ahead of Vanderbilt there is there's a little bit of the push from Louisville, and there's a little bit of a pull on Vanderbilt where, you know, we knew that they were going to be without Austin Martin. But that was an offense that was really struggling to find its footing. I saw it with my own eyes that last weekend of the season before things got shut down. It was just an offense that was sputtering. And then you take Austin Martin out of it, which, yes, was expected. But then on top of it, you know, you do lose guys to free agent signings. And I'm thinking of a guy like Harrison Ray, who might not be the big, bold, you know, headline name in any Vanderbilt lineup. But he was a guy who really could turn in a good at-bat. He was a guy who, when things were really going poorly for that offense, you could kind of turn to for the type of veteran leadership that you need. The guy who can really kind of turn things around with some of the little things that he does. And sometimes that stuff gets overplayed. But I think when you're looking at a team that was a lineup that was still trying to figure things out, guys like that are important. And so now you're going into a season where you have the expected level of turnover plus a little bit extra for a group that already was on shaky ground. And do I think Vanderbilt's offense will be fine by the time we look up in April of 2021? I'd bet so. But maybe it means that there's a little bit more growing pain at the beginning of 2021 from a lineup standpoint than there otherwise would be. And I think when you're talking the difference in one spot in the rankings, 7 versus 8, I think those are the little types of things that maybe end up mattering a little bit more.
Yeah, I would definitely agree in that. And, you know, Vanderbilt's still 8. I still think they're going to Omaha, and I still think they're going to be incredibly difficult in the NCAA tournament because they'll still have Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter. But I think during the course of the regular season, just the depth that Louisville, the added depth that Louisville has, the added experience they have in a couple of those guys coming back, and the lineup strength, I think all of that plays a little more in the regular season. And then, you know, we'll see how it shakes out in the postseason. But if you have to go to Nashville for a regional or super regional, or if they have to go on the road for one of those two things, which I wouldn't expect either, but, and you see Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter as their 1-2, you know, that's not a comfortable situation to be in. And we'll see how they manage the rest of their pitching staff. They'll have plenty of options, as always, but just those two guys at the front of the rotation are going to make the Commodores very difficult to beat, I would think, in 2021. I just moving them behind Louisville, I don't think is any sort of real indication that we're moving off of Vanderbilt in any way. It's just there was a little more lost in the draft than anticipated, and a little more that Louisville held on to than anticipated. And they were close to begin with, and so we flipped them here. And we'll see. Hopefully we'll get to see them play again next year. Obviously, they always play the Battle of the Barrel. Maybe we'll see a rematch in Omaha like we did in 2019 as well. That's the top 25. Again, you can check out the full thing over on the website. We will probably be revisiting it again in the off season at a time to be figured out later, as we figure out what fall ball looks like and the like. But we'll certainly have a regular preseason top 25, even if we end up not revisiting our early top 25 again in the off season. Again, that plans on that still developing. So we're on the Baseball America College podcast, Joe and I are cutting back to once a week now. We have been going twice a week during the season, and season as defined by what was supposed to be the season, with our classic games that we're rewatching. We brought that series to a close, and we are cutting back to once a week on the college podcast, at least for now. Joe and I are still kind of evaluating what the podcast will look like the rest of the off season, but we are committed to coming to you at least once a week until we get baseball back. And if the opportunity for a second podcast in a week warrants, we'll certainly avail ourselves of it. But for now, you should only expect once a week from us. And, you know, we're still going to be publishing this one at the start of the week, and I would still encourage you to subscribe to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, be that Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you're getting your podcasts. You can find us there. And if you subscribe, rate, review, we appreciate you doing all of those things. But Joe, if anybody has ideas for a second podcast, I believe we are still open to the idea.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the idea is that the idea behind kind of brainstorming ideas is that at some point we would like to go back to a second podcast. It's kind of a series, if you will, of podcasts as opposed to just one-offs week after week after week. That's still the idea. So yeah, I mean, I would love to hear what other people would like to hear. Not just because we're leaning on you for idea generation. Oh, there's, you know, part of that, but also just because, you know, I think we're in agreement that we're trying to find the best way to serve the listeners who have, you know, kind of stuck with us through just tough content times, not to mention tough times in a lot of other ways in our world, but just in terms of, hey, college baseball was gone and we tried to keep at it for you guys. And so certainly we want to keep that relationship going and want you to be a part of that. So yeah, ideas are certainly welcome through all the regular channels that, you know, that we rattle off here, Twitter or our emails are findable. I think we'd really love to hear ideas that you guys have that more than just one-off ideas. We're talking stuff that would, you know, last a few weeks that we could really dive in on and examine. That's the kind of stuff we're looking for.
Absolutely. So you can send those to us on Twitter. I am at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. And if you follow us, you get all the latest college baseball news. And sometimes we talk about tacos. That's my pitch for you to follow us on Twitter, I guess. Mostly college baseball, sometimes tacos.
Right.
All right. So we will bring this podcast home for a close now. We really appreciate you guys listening. We, again, we'll be back here next week, not later this week, but next week with another edition of the Baseball America College podcast with probably another guest, hopefully another guest as good as Kevin O'Sullivan from the college baseball world. And we'll continue rolling with these throughout the summer as there's still plenty going on within college baseball to talk about. So I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank you everyone for subscribing, especially as well. Thank you to Florida coach Kevin O'Sullivan for joining us today. For Joe, as always, I'm Teddy Cahill. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America College podcast.